Well, they say it's always 5 o'clock somewhere in the world. It's 5 o'clock in Salford. How you doing? Hope your Tuesday has gone well, or is going well. It's me, the BBG, Richie Allen with you for the next couple of hours. Got a terrific show lined up for you today. Do tweet my programme at BB... No, it isn't. It's, yes, at BBG Richie. That's the one, at BBG Richie.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
Of course it's BBG Richie. That's the one.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, Irish GP Dr. Pat Morrissey has made the headlines in my country of late because Pat has stated that he would go to court to head off any attempts to remove him from his job. He doesn't support the Irish government's lockdown measures, and he has argued that the vaccines on offer in Ireland are untested, unlicensed and experimental. Therefore, he doesn't want to deliver them to his patients. Had a lovely chat with Pat today. He'll be on the programme a little bit later on from Adair in County Limerick, Dr. Pat Morrissey. Before that, lots to talk about. I'm going to be rounding up today's biggest news stories and... let's have some fun then. Yeah. Fun, I don't know, but let's do something. Let's have a chat, you and me. You can also leave comments on Facebook if you like. If you don't do the Twitter thing and you would like to leave a comment, I will find them on Facebook as well. That I promise you. Some interesting stuff on richieallen.co.uk today. If you haven't checked out the website yet, it's relatively newly revamped. Do check it out. New, brand new articles going up there pretty much every day. And a big story broke overnight out of Treviso in northern Italy. You might have seen this. Dozens of teachers who received a coronavirus vaccine, the AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccine, dozens of them who got that vaccine over the weekend just gone, called in sick yesterday, Monday. A lot of teachers. Now, the Tribuna di Treviso newspaper broke the story last night. 15 teachers at Duca degli Abruzzi High School, forgive the butchering of the pronunciation, let me say that again, 15 teachers at Duca degli Abruzzi High School, they phoned in, 15 of them, complaining of fever and pain in their bones. And a nearby primary school, San Domenico Savio, also reported teachers had fallen ill after they had been vaccinated. Important to remember, they've all had the AstraZeneca jab. Why is that so important? Well, I've been reporting on, of late, 37 staff at a hospital in Germany falling ill after getting that same vaccine, and dozens of ambulance drivers in Dortmund were incapacitated after they had the virus. Now, we'll talk more about that story a bit later this hour, because AstraZeneca and Oxford, well, it's been working diligently today to try and repair the damage done by these stories, because no matter how hard certain people may have tried to keep these stories away from you and me, the stories are in the public domain, and they are very worried, the AstraZeneca people and the Oxford people, that this is going to be problematic in terms of people won't want to have that particular vaccine. So we'll get into that on the programme a little bit later this hour. I've got some interesting audio for you. Going to talk vaccine passports in a moment, so we'll leave that there for now. What else is in the news? Well, you know that the Prime Minister Boris Johnson yesterday announced the four-point plan, a four-point roadmap out of lockdown that will climax on July 21st when, all going well, all of these restrictions will be lifted once and for all. Johnson said he hopes it will be irreversible. You probably came across this yesterday. Now, it's been reported today, and I've covered this on the website, that Johnson wanted to reopen everything in time for the Easter bank holiday weekend. Now, stop shouting at your device of choice. I'm not saying that I believe that Boris Johnson wanted to reopen the pubs and the zoos and the outdoor attractions and the parks and non-essential shops. I'm not saying that I believe that, but it is being reported that he wanted to do it by Easter until the SAGE committee, led by the chief scientific advisor Patrick Vallance, told Johnson that if he did so, it could kill 91,000 people. Now, you'll have to imagine how they came up with the specific number of 91,000. But papers were released last night, seen by the UK media, The Times and the Daily Mail, that showed that Johnson wanted us all out and about by the Easter bank holiday weekend until the prophets of doom, the witch doctors of SAGE, Patrick Vallance and Chris Whitty, said, no, you'll kill more people. Again, we'll get into that a little bit more this hour. Coming up for 6:30 past five, your Richie Allen radio show. Yours, 'tis yours, I tell you. And just before coming on air, I learned that the House of Representatives in North Dakota, do you know where North Dakota is on a map of North America? Do you? Well, you have a bigger brain than me then, because I couldn't place it, to be honest. I'm trying to think now. Midwest, is it? I have no clue. But anyway, the House of Representatives in North Dakota, and I do have some listeners in North Dakota, not many, but I do have one or two. The House of Representatives has voted to make mandates on wearing face masks illegal. This is interesting now. A bill which has passed was sponsored by Representative Jeff Hoverson. Not sure if he's Democrat or Republican. Is he Republican? He might be Republican. Jeff Hoverson. He labelled the mask mandate instituted by North Dakota Governor, whose name I don't know, he labelled it as diabolical silliness, saying that our state is not a prison camp. Mask mandates illegal from now on in the state of North Dakota. Jeff Hoverson saying that it's diabolical silliness to make people wear masks. The state isn't a prison camp. Now, the legislation outlines that neither a state nor a local elected official or a political subdivision of the state, none of these parties may mandate an individual in North Dakota to use a face mask, a face shield or other face covering. It also prohibits, does the bill, making use of a face mask or face covering a condition for entry to education, employment or services. Very good news coming out of North Dakota there. I did my best to butcher that story. Did I succeed? Did I? I fumbled a bit there, didn't I? Anyway, the good news is they passed a bill there to say that you can't mandate masks for any reason. Good stuff. Try and get some comment from North Dakota. Here was a funny story on the BBC website today. Police officers in Derbyshire found an irresponsible football match being played at a closed leisure centre, and, well, they deployed their cars and their bikes and their motorbikes. They got to the football pitch at the leisure centre, but the kids that had been playing football had scarpered. They had legged it. 15 to 20 kids had forced their way onto the locked outdoor pitch. They had a football. They were having a kickabout. Somebody called the police. The police said it was irresponsible. But the funniest part of the story is the police went on Facebook, Derbyshire police went on Facebook, to say that our officers were horrified. Horrified to find a group of young people playing football. Horrified.
What kind of fuckery is this?
Imagine a football pitch, young people kicking a ball. Anyway, after being alerted to the police presence, the gathering soon split up and made a hasty getaway. And Derbyshire police went on to say, a gathering of 20 is simply not acceptable. And quite frankly, it's irresponsible in the times we are all living through. The UK is a police state, I kid you not. Now, I have a lot to get through, a lot of audio for you, a lot of content coming up between now and 6 o'clock. And Dr. Pat Morrissey, live from Adair in County Limerick, in the second hour. Here's The Clash. Should I stay or should I go? The Clash. Should I stay or should I go? There must be an epidemic of hemorrhoids or piles coming in the country. There must be. I was thinking a bit about this today. Why, Baldy? Do you think you have piles? No, I don't. If I did, I would tell you. I would actually tell you if I had piles. I would do, because I'd be looking for an alternative remedy to Preparation H, or whatever the preparation is these days. But I was thinking, as I do, I'm a strange old beast, me. I'm a loner. I'm out and about by myself with my dog. And I'm thinking, I wonder, with everybody being confined to their houses and sitting down a lot, is there an avalanche of hemorrhoids coming in the UK? Is there? Have you got hemorrhoids? BBG Richie on Twitter. I want to know. I want to know if you got hemorrhoids or anything else. Anything else, any other ailment that has been brought on by your idleness in lockdown over the last 12 months. It is 14 minutes past five. It is the BBG. Vaccine passports then, U-turn by the government. Remember, back in the day, Nadeem Zahawi originally, said Nadeem Zahawi, the vaccine minister. I think it'll be the private sector. Then he went, no. It's not the sort of thing that we do. Bit draconian, no. Now they're looking at it. The lying backstards. Of course they're looking at it. As part of this roadmap out of lockdown, the government has announced that it will review whether COVID certificates or vaccine passports might be of any use. Here's the Prime Minister Boris Johnson speaking today about this very subject. You will hear the journalist question first.
I just want to ask you about immunity certificates. I mean, I think everyone's going to end up calling them vaccine passports, whatever the government does. You announced a review yesterday into that. Can you just say a little bit more about who's doing it, how long it'll take? And in particular, is anything off the table as part of that review?
This is an area where, you know, we're looking at a novelty for our country. We haven't had stuff like this before. We've never thought in terms of having something that you have to show to go to, a pub or a theatre. So there are deep and complex issues that we need to explore, ethical issues about what the role is for government in mandating or people to have such thing, or indeed banning people from doing such a thing. There are complex issues we need to work out. We can't be discriminatory against people who, for whatever reason, can't have the vaccine. There might be reasons, medical reasons, why people can't have a vaccine, or difficulties that they, some people may genuinely refuse to have one. Now, I think that's a mistake. I think everybody should have a vaccine. But we need to thrash all this out. And we've got time, because what we're doing is rolling out the vaccination programme. And that will go on for the next couple of months. And in the interval, what I want to see is a proper review into the issue. And that's going to be led by Michael Gove, by the Chancellor of Duchy of Lancaster.
Michael Gove is going to lead the inquiry into whether vaccine passports are a good thing or not. You will know by now that in Israel, you must have a green passport, a passport. What's it called again? God, man. Get your act together. What's going on here? There's a lovely picture on my website of Benjamin Netanyahu holding one. The green passport, that's right. You can download it. If you've been vaccinated in Israel, you can download your green passport through an app run by the health ministry or print it out. They're allowing printing, you see, because the ultra-Orthodox community of Jews in Israel, they don't like technology, apparently. Good for them. Yuli Edelstein, the health minister, has said in Israel, getting vaccinated is a moral duty, part of our mutual responsibility. If you don't have the jab, you'll be left behind. And apparently the Israeli police are looking for green passport forgeries, because it's now a criminal offence to forge a green passport to attempt to access a venue, like a swimming pool, a gym, or a hotel even. I know. Exciting times. Will they follow suit here in the UK? Boris Johnson's colleague, Dehina Davison, I think that's how it's pronounced, Dehina or Dehina, 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 D-E-H-E-N-N-A. Dehenna Davis, I couldn't give a shit. Dehenna Davis, an MP, was on Politics Live on the BBC. She is a Tory. What does she think of the old vaccine passports?
Well, it's something that, you know, as someone who believes in freedom, it's a little bit of an uncomfortable thought, thinking you might need a piece of paper to go to the pub or whatever it might be. But I think the government's exactly right to conduct a really wide-scale review into this, and I'm pleased that that's going on at the moment. Because obviously at the moment we do have to strike the balance between keeping people safe, protecting people from serious illness and death from COVID, whilst also reopening the economy as quickly as we can to make sure those businesses have got the best possible chance of survival. So I think it's right this review is going ahead, and I'm looking forward to the results of it.
Well, if the results state that you do have to have a piece of paper or perhaps something on an app that you have to show on your phone, how would you feel about it, Deanna, to get into the pub, for example?
Well, I know I've got one constituent who's actually offering up his services to develop such an app. So on the one hand, you know, if he could be rolled into that, that for me as his constituency MP would be very exciting. But the key thing really is just to make sure that we are opening up in the safest possible way to make sure that not only are we protecting people's health, but also we're protecting the economy as best we can.
Mm. Dehenna. That's the one. Dehenna Davison. Right. On the same show, Kevin Maguire, Daily Mirror, calls himself a socialist. What does he think of vaccine passports?
Yeah, Joe, if we go a little bit further back, Nadeem Zawari expressed sympathy for the idea. Then he was sat on by Downing Street, ruled it out. Now it's back in. The Prime Minister's confirmed he's thinking about it. It's there in the roadmap document, the 68 pages. And of course, the rest of the world might make the decision for us, and you may require one to travel. The thornier issue is whether you will need one at home. But in a pubs, restaurants, they can have a dress code. Why can't they have a vaccine code? The government will look at it. And once everybody has had the opportunity to be vaccinated, those who hold out, you will say, well, are they excluding themselves from society? Isn't it, if they wish to do that, why should they be able to go into a pub or restaurant? But if everyone else has been vaccinated, do those unvaccinated actually pose a threat to everybody else? Are they just endangering themselves? So there's lots of issues to discuss, but the government's been quietly considering this, but is being afraid to come forward with the idea until a large number of people are actually vaccinated.
Kevin Maguire. Yeah, I did put on my website today, I did pose a question. Now, I'm not saying this is really going on, but what if this talk of vaccine passport is a bit of a red herring? What if they're trying to scare people into anger, maybe, over talk of the vaccine passport, and then at a later stage they can step back a bit and say, okay, we hear you about the Orwellian overtones of the vaccine passport. How about we settle for testing instead? How about we settle for you must test yourselves regularly in order to be able to go to your football matches or your pubs or whatever? I just wonder. Now, I could be very wrong. Like I said, I'm not saying that's what I think. The vaccine passport could be very real. We're going to find out, aren't we? And what about forcing carers to have a vaccine? If you're caring for the elderly and the vulnerable, either in their own homes or if they're in a care home, should those who care for the elderly be forced to have the vaccine or told in the event they refuse, well, you've got no job? This came up on Good Morning Britain today. Adam Purnell is the main man at Keppelgate Care Home. He's not thrilled about the idea of asking people to take the vaccine, you know, or do one, basically, or don't work. He tells Piers Morgan that it's hard enough as it is to attract carers into the profession without being told that they have to have the vaccine or they don't have a job. Here he is, Adam Purnell, Keppelgate Care Home.
Recruiting in health and social care is one of the most difficult things we have. You know, we're underpaid, we're underfunded, we're undervalued. We're struggling to get people through the door to come and want to work in health and social care during a worldwide pandemic. So if we start enforcing and mandating vaccines on top of that, we're just going to limit the amount of people that are going to want to come in and work for us.
But sorry, but I mean, with the greatest will in the world, if you're going to, you know, not, if basically financial imperative and staffing issues are your deciding factor about whether to let people care for the oldest, most vulnerable people in the country who don't want to have a vaccine to protect just themselves, but from to protect the elderly people that they're in charge of. If I had an elderly relative in a care home and I knew the person caring for them was refusing to have the vaccine, I wouldn't want that.
I mean, you know, you're more than welcome to come and apply for a job, Pierce, if you want, because we're going to need people to work in social care. I mean,
no, I want people to work in social care, but I don't want them to refuse the vaccine.
That they're not supposed to have. I'm not telling people to refuse the vaccine. What I'm saying is, if we automatically, in the next month or two, go, right, everyone needs to have the vaccine, social care is going to be in a much dangerous position than it currently is now, because there won't be the people to work.
Well, unless, as Professor Whitty said, they actually see it as a responsibility and part of a job, which I think if you're in social care or working in the NHS, I'm sorry, you should feel a responsibility and duty of care to you, the people you're caring for.
And if that's going to be the case, maybe there should be a better informative schedule for people to learn from. You know, I think we should be mandating vaccine training awareness in places. We need a better line of information to provide people.
Yeah. Adam Purnell there runs a care home, Keppelgate. All righty. Thanks for your tweets, by the way, at BBG Richie. Bill tweets, I love the way they're still pretending to care about the elderly and the vulnerable. Evil wankers. The lot of them. Language, Bill. Language. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate that. Mel Colvin, Melly tweets, how you doing, Melly? It seems very strange that a country like Israel, whose residents' forefathers were singled out by a yellow star, would encourage this. That's a point, Melly, that has been made by many people in the last 48 hours. How have they sold that? In Israel, the idea that you must have the jab or you're being left behind, you can't go here, you can't go there. And as I said on my piece on the website today, protests seem to have been sporadic, doesn't seem to be a big movement against it. Israeli people seem to be resigned to it. Wow. Hi to Kieran. How you doing, Kieran? Richie, the requirement to be tested for COVID-19 to participate in social life is inevitable. There just is not enough pushback in the UK. The question is, if the unvaccinated are considered to be a danger, is it feasible that they will be forcibly quarantined? Ah, Kieran, I don't know. I don't want to even go there, mate. Hi to Gino from Cork, from County Cork, the Rebel County. How you doing, Gino? This is my first tweet, says Gino. Listens to me every day. Thanks, pal. I really appreciate it. Can you play the Did You Do It audio? I can do, no problem there. I'm 62, says Gino, healthy, and I would rather go to prison than get tested or get vaccinated, he says. I would rather go to prison than get tested or get vaccinated. Gino, just for you.
Did you do it?
That's the one. That's the one.
Did you do it?
Did you do it? Oh, yeah. You're a big child then, Gino, just like the BBG. That's good. That's good. Nothing wrong with that. Hi to Natalie. Hi to David, who says, I think it's trying to please the swathes of nervous ninnies. Obviously, the elites wouldn't be able to travel around freely. Hey, listen, the BBC did a Vox Pop. A Vox Populi. What it is, you go out and about, you ask the public a single question. You ask everybody the same question. The BBC wanted to know of people on the streets of London, what do you think of vaccine passports to go about your business in the UK?
I am for it. Whether you want to travel, you want to go to the pub, like you said, people need to be vaccinated.
I don't think the government has a great record of IT implementations and managing the technology very well. So I think it would be very much depend on how the passport was managed and how it was going to be used.
We're all doing it for each other, you know. We're just trying to keep each other well. So I don't have a problem with it whatsoever.
I don't think it should be a passport to say you can do this and you can't do that with or without a vaccine. That's not my decision. That's for each individual to make.
Yeah. I can't wait to get back to bingo. I can't wait to get back to bingo. I normally play 5 cards at bingo. Me. Vaccine passports, good. It's a good idea. Good idea. Most people are all for it. I overheard a conversation this afternoon. And outside my window, they're all for it. Yeah, yeah. Bring them in quick as you can. Anything to get us out. Hi to Wendy, Ruth. Hi to William in Scotland. How you doing, William? Hope all is well with you. Let me just do that. Yes, a bit better, isn't it? Okay. Right, Dr. Pat Morrissey on the Richie Allen Radio Show coming right soon in the second hour. Before that, lots to talk about with you. Hi to Martin Brennan. Martin, by the way, a colleague of, not a medical colleague as far as I understand, but somebody who knows Pat Morrissey, Dr. Pat Morrissey, quite well, and put me in touch with him. So thank you, Martin. Richie Allen Radio Show audience getting involved in the production. Nothing wrong with that. Hi to Satch. Satch says, Richie, it's all scare tactics. They don't want any of us going back to pubs, never mind the vaccinated. This is all about scaring people into getting the vaccine, I think. Thanks for all of those tweets. It's time for another tune. And when I return, lots more to talk about on Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. This is the Blue Oyster Cult. Don't fear the Reaper. Don't fear the Reaper. Fear the vaccine. All right, the rest of the song goes on till about mid-November, so we'll get rid of that. That's Blue Oyster Cult, Don't Fear the Reaper, on the Richie Allen Radio Show. 29 minutes to the top of the hour. Dr. Pat Morrissey, Adair in County Limerick, will join the programme a little bit later on. I wonder, is that the problem? Yeah. Okay. A little minor technical thing going on. My engineer extraordinaire, Paul Ripley, will be with me. He's not on call 24 hours a day, you see. I've got the studio here is, there's nothing like it. It's like Kennedy Space Center is what it's like. It's like Kennedy Space Center and Mission Control in Texas. The last word in technology and sound processors. But there's a wire loose somewhere and it's pissing me off. But sure, you just have to roll with the punches, improvise, adapt and overcome. That's what you do. No point in complaining about it because who'd listen? At BBG Richie, at BBG Richie, being offensive is an offence according to Merseyside Police. You probably saw this. It's quite funny. Hey, before we get to that, I've just had a tweet, because he's banned. He's banned from Twitter. He's banned. I've just had an email from Spiro Skouras, journalist, a giant of a man over there on the Pacific, well, not quite the Pacific coast in the US, but over there in Arizona. North Dakota, says Spiro, is directly north of South Dakota. Funny guy, that Spiro Skouras. Funny guy.
You stupid, ignorant son of a bitch, dumb bastard! Jesus Christ, I've met some dumb bastards in my time, but you outdo them all.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't be giving me that old gripe now. Yeah, do that again. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll just play by myself for the next hour and a half and you do your own thing. How about that? Right, okay, moving on. Moving right on. Yes, being offensive is an offence. Being offensive is an offence, according to Merseyside police officers. You saw this, didn't you? Them standing alongside a lorry with a billboard that said being offensive is an offence. They're after hate crime people, you see. They're after hate crime people. Merseyside police wants to protect LGBTQ plus people. Yes, but this campaign entitled Being Offensive is an Offence has received a lot of flack, a lot of criticism. People saying that it's an attack on free speech because how could there be anything illegal about causing offence? Anyway, Merseyside police apologised, but it doesn't make it any less sinister. LBC's Nick Ferrari got into this issue this morning with Labour councillor Emily Spurrell. Now, Emily Spurrell is a one-time deputy police and crime commissioner at Merseyside Police. You'll hear Nick Ferrari first, then you'll hear the Labour councillor. This is interesting.
It's not the intention. What does it say about the professionalism or capability of Merseyside Police that they're inventing crimes that don't exist, councillor?
I don't think it's fair to say they're trying to invent crimes. I think, you know, they're
acknowledging... But they are, respectively. They're saying that being offensive is an offence. And I'm sure you, as you've served as Deputy Police and Crime Commissioner, know instantly that's simply nonsense. What does it say about the leadership that this was ever authorised?
Well, I think, as I say, I think it was very clumsy delivered. I think, you know, the idea behind it is actually a lot of people don't realise that what they're saying is a hate crime. A lot of people think they can, you know, say what they like it to.
A lot of people don't realise that what they are saying is a hate crime. A lot of people don't realise that they can't say what they like. Really? According to who?
What they like in terms of targeting someone's sexuality. And actually, that does go into hate crime territory. So I think they were trying to remind people that actually what you say can be considered a hate crime. And it's important that you're aware of when that might happen. So, you know, you're right. It was clumsy delivered. They've since retracted it, which is good. But I think the intention to remind people that what you say, you know, can be very, very harmful and actually can be considered a hate crime.
Is there an issue for lesbian, gay, bisexual and trans people in Birkenhead or in Liverpool? Are they becoming subject or victims of this sort of crime, or it's no worse than anywhere else in the country, Councillor?
I think
she doesn't know.
It's reflective of the whole country, to be honest. I think we're seeing LGBT hate crime increase across the board. You know, we've got lots of really, really great active groups on Merseyside who are fighting really hard. We do have an issue.
Fighting hard against what? What are these active groups in Merseyside fighting hard against? What are they fighting hard against? What? Crimes against LGBT people. It's non-existent. It's not happening. It isn't. Holy God. This is madness. 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 I mean, this is madness, isn't it? It isn't happening anywhere. Christ. The world has never been more friendly and more open to gay and lesbian men and women. Never. Christ, I might turn gay myself. I might get a job at the BBC. I might get a job on LBC, Talk Radio, Channel 4. I might be hosting Countdown next month if I come out of the closet. What the fuck is going on, right?
An issue, I think, where crimes are still underreported. A lot of the time, people don't have confidence that the police aren't going to take it seriously. Mm. You know, if they are treated as a victim. And so it's really important, actually, the police do come forward and say, we will take this seriously. We will believe the victim. We will listen to them. We will make an assessment and we will support you through that. So I think, you know, it's right that the police are very vocal about having that support for LGBT community.
But lastly, look, you're a councillor, so you are a community leader of sorts. Mm. I have to put it to you, councillor. I would have thought the good folk of Merseyside, the ward you act, you represent, are probably more concerned about the fact that their children are safe on the streets, that their cars aren't being nicked or their houses aren't being broken into, than posing, officers posing by a campaign that, frankly, was wrong and inept. Why are the police troubling over this?
Yes, why are the police campaigning on behalf of lesbians, gays, trans people, non-binaries and whatever else?
I don't think it's a case of saying that one crime is worse or much than another. I think, you know, we have, you know, a really great police force on Merseyside. They work really hard to tackle, you know, county lines behaviour, modern slavery, all of those issues you're talking about, ASB, you know.
But this is social working, isn't it? This is like police.
No,
this isn't in your patch, but this is like police officers wearing high-heeled shoes when it was anti-slavery month, police officers painting their fingernails pink for another campaign, and police officers are not there to campaign, are they? They're there to uphold the law, not make up new laws, lastly.
Police officers are there to support every community on Merseyside.
Shut up. Shut up! Absolutely shut up. I couldn't work in mainstream media now. I couldn't. I mean, the door has been closed to me anyway. I couldn't listen to fools like her. How could you deal with that crap? He's right. Police officers wearing high heels to support anti-slavery month. Police officers painting their fingernails pink. Even men. Wow. Elizabeth First. How you doing, Elizabeth? Love your show, Richie. Thank you from Spain. The show keeps me sane. That's very good. Going to ask my mister for help, she says, in setting up some support for the programme. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. I really appreciate that. And I had a tweet there from Lola, which has just disappeared off the old screen there. But I want to read it because it's important. Lola says, Richie, I listen every day that you're on air. We will be watching our second funeral online tomorrow. We're not allowed to go in person as it's over 300 miles away. Not allowed to hug or see our families in person to console them. One funeral, a close friend. The other one is our aunt. We can't be there, says Lola. Lola, believe me when I say I'm terribly sorry for you and for anybody else that is going through that. I think it's time for people to disobey, Lola. I think it's time for people, if they want to attend a funeral, to show up to it. If there's a man or woman whom you loved in life, whom you want to pay tribute to honour, to respect, you just turn up to that chapel and dare the numpties who wear high heels and paint their fingernails fucking pink, dare them to issue you a fine or a summons because you're turning up to grieve a friend or an aunt or somebody special. Now, that's not me talking. It's not keyboard warrior talk. You couldn't keep me away from the funeral of somebody that I wanted to pay respects to. And I mean that. Let's move on. Very, very quickly. Lots to get through before Pat Morrissey comes on. On the same type of subject, hate crime and Twitter wars and all that crap, Ricky Gervais, the actor and comedian, was on BBC Radio 5 Live earlier. And he was talking about cancel culture. You know cancel culture, demanding that somebody is fired or banned or demonetized, or demanding that nobody does business with that person simply because you don't like their opinions. Listen to Ricky Gervais.
Well, you know what? There's two things to this, isn't there? Again, it's a sliding scale. If getting cancelled is being culpable for your actions, then yeah, that's always been around. Why then?
If
getting cancelled is, I don't like you as a comedian, I'm burning your DVDs and I'm never coming to one of your shows, that's great, that's their right. If being cancelled is, I've just found a 25-year-old email from someone who said the wrong thing in private, and now they've got a top job and we have to destroy their career, I want to go, well, hold on, this is what's happened? What's happened here? You know? And you usually find ulterior motive, because no one really cares about the argument anymore or the principle. They just care about who's saying it. They're trying to take down a general on the other side, and it falls into tribes, you know? And I see it all the time. And you see it more clearly on Twitter, because you look at their profile and they've got all their credentials in there, and then they're trying to get someone cancelled who's got the other credentials. And you think, well, you're not even listening to each other now. You've just read each other's bio.
Yeah, as simple as that. Ricky Gervais, well said. Back in a moment with more.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Now, Gerald Celente will be on the programme for his monthly visit to talk all things US news and economic trends. Gerald will be with me tomorrow. Tomorrow is Wednesday. Yes, he will be. Looking forward to that. It's at BBG Richie. A lot of tweets coming in. Thank you for them. Thank you for them. Chat amongst yourselves there. Let's just move on now. Back to Johnson's roadmap out of lockdown. Julia Hartley Brewer, talk radio presenter, had Professor Sean Griffiths on. Sean Griffiths seems to believe that mask wearing will be a thing even after July 21st, when all restrictions are supposed to have disappeared. Yeah, right. Here's Sean Griffiths with the Julia Hartley Brewer. Interesting exchange, this.
This will take us out of lockdown.
Count as lockdown?
Well, I think I count as lockdown the inability to mix with friends and family. I think we will still be having coronavirus around in the population, so we will still have some measures, which I don't count as lockdown. I count as public health protection. So something like, you know, the wearing of masks. The Prime Minister set up a review into some of these contentious issues. So the sort of issues around, you know, should we continue to wear masks beyond July the 21st?
You can.
The answer is probably yes.
Probably well, yes. No. I mean, you can if you
probably
want to,
yes.
If you want to wear a mask, you could wear a balaclava all day if you want.
Well, I might, Julia, because
once you've had the vaccine, what the hell has it got to do with me to protect your public health wearing a mask? I don't have to wear a mask when we've got a flu outbreak.
Well, if you were in other countries, you might voluntarily choose to wear a mask.
Key word in that sentence:
pandemic is choice.
Voluntary.
That's choice.
Yes, but that's very different, isn't it? Oh, no, I mean, for me, the wearing of masks, once they are no longer mandatory, the wearing of masks to me will be the giveaway of people who I want to know and people I don't want to know. That's simple as that.
Yeah. The wearing of masks will be a giveaway. It will let me know the people I do want to know and the people I don't want to know. Julia Hartley Brewer there, yeah. I'm with you, Julia Hartley Brewer. But I'm also suspicious that none of these measures are entirely going away in the coming months. As part of schools reopening on March the 8th, that's the 8th of March, secondary school children will have to have 2 coronavirus tests a week. I've talked about this a lot recently and I've written about it. They will have to wear masks in the classroom. Astonishingly. Yes, it's dreadful, isn't it? Talk radio host, colleague of Julia Hartley Brewer, he's not thrilled about it at all.
Because at the end of the day, I mean, do you really want your children forced to wear a mask for around 8 hours? Now, you might say, what the kid's doing in school for 8 hours, but it's effectively how long they're there. 8:30 till about 3:30 is 8 hours, by anybody's reckoning, isn't it? So I would suggest that basically, if you want to kind of revolt against that, then it seems as though that might be a possibility. But I'd love to know what you're being told by your school and by your teachers, if your kids are there at the moment. Here's something from somebody who doesn't give a name, unfortunately. Mike, regarding masks, there is a huge section of the population now who are psychologically attached to their masks because they have been bombarded with terrifying adverts and signage for a year. I walked past a masked lady on a footpath last week. As we approached, she turned her back to us and clamped both hands firmly over her face. The psychological impact of mask wearing cannot be ignored. We need to slowly stop wearing them or they will be with us forever. R is the initial that's been put at the end of that. Yeah, I think that's true. There's no question that there's some people out there who are absolutely terrified, and largely because they've been told to be terrified. And I'm not saying don't be terrified, but really, do you really think that that is the way that we should be being treated in this country? 0344 499 1000. If you've got children, surely they should be able to go to school without a mask on, shouldn't they?
I'd like to think that if you are the... And we heard Charlie Stevenson on the phone-in programme last night. Charlie has got children in secondary school. And both Charlie and his wife are gravely concerned about this mandating of masks for secondary school children. This instruction that they must wear masks in the classrooms and have these lateral flow tests twice a week. We're really here now, aren't we? Yeah, we sure are. You're with the Richie Allen Radio Show. I have no idea what time it is. 12 minutes maybe to the top of the hour. I mean, a funny thing is going on here. Systems are shutting down and rebooting by themselves. A playout system has just crashed and restarted to my left. There are 5 very important computers in this state-of-the-art radio studio. And today they seem to be doing things as if they have a life of their own. And I'm just sitting here grinning away to myself. The microphone is still live. It's a hot mic. It's a hot mic, I tell you. I can talk away anyway if things do go pear-shaped. But the phone system is working. Thanks be to Japers. So I should be able to speak unencumbered, uninhibited. I should be able to chat with Dr. Pat Morrissey right soon. AstraZeneca is working around the clock to convince people its vaccine is safe. It seems that way. Mentioned at the top of the programme, reports out of Treviso in northern Italy have revealed that dozens of teachers who got the vaccine this weekend, the weekend just gone, declared themselves unfit to go to school. It resulted in one school closing as a result. 37 staff at a German hospital reported being unwell after having the vaccine. Dozens of ambulance drivers in Dortmund had the AstraZeneca vaccine and they have been unwell too. The German government and other European governments have said they are not confident that the jab is, well, safe for senior citizens. And AstraZeneca and Oxford have not been able to keep this quiet. And they are worried, of course they're worried, that around Europe and in the UK maybe and in Ireland, people won't want the AstraZeneca vaccine. So they're trying to repair the damage today. Sky News invited Professor Uwe Janssens. It's probably Uwe Janssens. Yeah, for sure. Professor Uwe Janssens came on today, German bloke, the former president of the German Association of Critical Care. Uptake in Germany has plummeted because of the news of the injuries. Here's Uwe Janssen. Yeah.
You see, the population, people are always very, very, very skeptic about vaccines. And in Germany, I'm very sad about this. It just dries up the skepticism. And I think it's we see that this is the result of disinformation, misinformation, and the result of many, many fake news which are transported towards the social medias. And I think the medical societies on the one hand and the politicians on the other hand, they couldn't get the good information to the people. So, you see, we know that you have to have confidence in the vaccine. And this is a very, very critical point. The people are not, whatever the reason is, confident in this AstraZeneca vaccine.
Whatever the reason. Professor Uwe Janssen, whatever the reason, people are not confident in the vaccine. They're not confident because they're dropping like flies after taking it, you mad kraut. What do you think? They're not confident just for the hell of it? You having the AstraZeneca vaccine? I'm just not confident in... I don't know why. Doctors, healthcare workers in Germany, healthcare workers won't go near it. So why should a member of the public? Do you want this vaccine? No, because I can see the doctors and nurses and janitors and matrons and, I don't know, obstetricians and gynecologists don't want it. I think I might give it a miss myself, you know. This guy is comedy gold.
Seneca vaccine, which really proves to be much more efficacious. See,
you can't even speak this.
And the influenza vaccine, for instance. And now the data are showing up, and you just mentioned it, that after the just one dose AstraZeneca, after 90 days, there is an efficacy severe COVID about nearly 100%. So we must...
He's made a claim there that if you have the AstraZeneca vaccine, he is saying that information has come to light. Data is proving, he says, that if you have the AstraZeneca vaccine, it's nearly 100% guaranteed that you won't get severe COVID after 90 days. 90 days after having the vaccine, you are protected against severe COVID, he says. Why won't people just listen and just take it?
We must convince the people. We must try to talk to them and say to them, come on, get the vaccine. And
we must say to them, come on, get the vaccine.
Remember that in the beginning, end of 2020, in my own department, there were some of the nurses and healthcare workers who said, I don't want to get vaccine. So we started a program within our hospital about a nationwide program for healthcare workers to enhance the acceptance of the vaccine. And we could show within online surveys that the skepticism gets down. In December, it was 50% said of the healthcare workers, the nurses, no, I don't want to get a vaccine. Now we are only 25% of them saying, oh, I'm very critical about it. So we are getting near to the point that to the 100% acceptance of the vaccine.
Mm. Then he is asked about mandating the vaccine for care workers, telling them, if you don't have it, you can't work in care, you can't work in health. What does he say?
Yes, we had some of these discussions in Germany in the beginning, January, and all the end of year of 2020. But I can tell you, and it's a worldwide phenomenon that healthcare workers show some hesitancy about vaccine. That's not only the problem, I think, in Germany, many other countries, and there are some very good studies showing in the center of the epidemic, corona epidemic, that healthcare workers are some way reluctant. So they think that the studies were done too fast. They think that the messenger RNA in the beginning could influence their fertility or their genes. So there are some very fancy reasons to do not accept, but to say to them you have the obligation to get the vaccine. I think that would lead to a very, very big, much more hesitancy to get the vaccination. So I think the ways to convince people to tell them that the vaccination has a very, very good efficacy without any serious adverse event, and we must have the publicity, the news, the radios and the TV to improve the compliance of anyone in the population, and not only the healthcare workers in Germany.
Wow. We must have the news, the television, the radio to help us with the compliance, he said. And you might want to just listen to that bit again.
Without any serious adverse event, and we must have the publicity, yeah, the news, the radios and the TV to improve the compliance of anyone
who doesn't want to take it. Rather, so I'll tell you what, journalists, you don't do your job. Don't ask any questions about the adverse events, the deaths, the serious side effects, the hospitalizations after people get the vaccine. Don't do that. You're supposed to be helping us with the compliance. And I'm guessing you heard the beginning of that answer there about the worldwide phenomenon of healthcare workers reluctant to take the jab. Did you hear that?
It's a worldwide phenomenon that...
He means phenomenon, I think. I'm sure he does.
Healthcare workers show some hesitancy about vaccine. That's not only the problem, I think, in Germany. Many other countries, and there are some very good studies showing in the center of the epidemic, corona epidemic, that healthcare workers are some way reluctant. So they think that the studies were done too fast. They think that the messenger RNA in the beginning could influence their fertility or their genes. So there are some very fancy reasons to do not accept, but to
a worldwide phenomenon. Healthcare workers don't want to take it. What are we going to do? They must want to murder the healthcare workers who are going public and saying, we don't want to have the vaccine. Now, healthcare workers covers, well, a lot of different types of people. It includes doctors and nurses and consultants. By consultants, you're talking oncologists, you're talking orthopedic surgeons, all manner of men and women don't want to touch this vaccine, says this guy, Professor Uwe Janssen. It's a phenomenon. How could anybody then, in their right mind, knowing that around the world healthcare workers are saying, no thanks. Thanks, you're very kind, but no thanks, I'd rather not. Why would you take it? You'd have to be bark, stark, raving mad, wouldn't you, to have it, regardless of the social, regardless of the societal consequences, regardless if you can't get in to see the new film, or you can't go to a restaurant, or you can't go and see Elton John at Manchester Arena. Well, I'll just have to live with that, because there's no way I'm having a vaccine. We're approaching 3 minutes to the top of the hour, 6 o'clock. Pat Morrissey should be with me a little after six, a couple of minutes after 6 o'clock. Time for another tune. Billy Joel, then. Little bit of Billy Joel for you.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
Billy Joel then, and We Didn't Start the Fire on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Just had a quick chat with Pat Morrissey. That's Dr. Pat Morrissey, Adair in County Limerick. Sounds like a lovely guy, does Pat. I've got to input again. It's funny, I've had a few technical meltdowns here today. It's been a fun hour. I've long passed my diva stage. I don't throw things around now and scream. I just laugh. So I'm going to take another tune in a moment and then dial up Pat, but it is going to work. We're back. All systems are operational again. in studio, back to me, in studio, all systems operational. A lot of people happy in Ireland about Pat coming on. If there's something you'd like to say to him, do tweet it to me, at BBG Richie. It couldn't be easier, at BBG Richie. I will put it to him. We're going to talk about his recent, maybe I shouldn't say it, it's up to Pat to describe it, but I suppose harassment, hassle even, from the medical authorities in Ireland. Pat has said, listen, the vaccine, I'm not convinced of the vaccine. He said, I think it's untested, I think it's unlicensed, and I think it's experimental, therefore I would rather not give it. Pat said, look, I'm not against vaccines, but I won't have one myself and I won't administer it to my patients until there is strong enough evidence that the vaccines pose no risks to health. That is, I would have imagined many moons ago, that was the position that most GPs would have adopted. It's the right thing to do. It's the caring, professional, ethical thing to do. I can't be sure of that myself, therefore I can't in good conscience give it to my patients. Now, I like Dr. Pat Morrissey's approach, right? But a lot of people in Ireland, in government and in medical circles, are not happy with him, and they are putting pressure on him, and we'll talk to Pat about that in a moment. While I dial him up then, here is a great tune from Bruce Springsteen's recent album. The album is called, what's it called? I haven't a clue. It's called The Power of Prayer, the song anyway. So here's the tune, back with Dr. Pat Morrissey. Bruce Springsteen on the Richie Allen Radio Show, The Power of Prayer, the song there. The time is exactly 5:30 past 6 o'clock. It is a Tuesday's programme, February 23rd, 2021. Lot to talk about now. I'm really glad that my guest this hour has been able to come on the programme and accepted our invitation to come on. Wrote about him on the website last week, and I just told you a moment ago that he is not an anti-vaxxer by any stretch of the imagination. But he has said that he doesn't support the Irish government's lockdown measures and that he thinks the vaccines on offer are untested, unlicensed and experimental. Again, he's not against vaccines, but he would prefer to wait until there is stronger evidence that the jabs do not pose any risks to health in the long term. And he's taken some flack for this position, which I said earlier seems like a very sensible position to me. Let's welcome to the programme, live from Adair in County Limerick, Dr. Pat Morrissey. Pat, you're very welcome to this parish. How are you?
Thanks very much. Thanks, Richie, for having me on. Can you hear me okay?
You sound loud and clear, Pat. It's a lovely line. Thanks for that. Tell us where this all began then, Pat, because I think it began last year when the vaccines became available, did it?
My stance against the lockdowns was going on before the vaccines came to prominence. They're rather central at the moment, but I had problems from April with the path that we were taking here in Ireland. It's been very similar in the UK because I could see the negative effects of the lockdown on my patients, and I was watching closely what was going on in other parts of the world, and not every part of the world was locked down, and one shining light on the hill, I suppose, was Sweden and what was going on there, and I was watching it very closely and listening to what experts had to say about it, and I was pulling my hair out because of the lack of attention, the lack of positive attention that the Swedish example was getting here. So that's where I was becoming vocal about everything. It was really about the lockdowns, the negative health effects of lockdowns, the disproportionality of lockdowns as a measure for trying to counteract a respiratory virus that travels, through the air and around the world. And, we have plenty of evidence of places with lockdowns and without lockdowns, and there's no benefit. Really at this stage, there's so much evidence there that lockdowns are ineffectual. At the very most, they very slightly slow down the spread, but at what cost? At what cost? That's what I ask.
Now, on the cost, you said there a moment ago that you noticed a negative effect amongst some of your own patients. Can you share a bit more about that, Pat? What were you seeing in your patients during lockdown?
Well, it varies. Psychopathology, you know, mental health issues, just an estimate, they've probably tripled, you know, anxiety, depression, then, you know, addictive disorders. I became much more acquainted with all my alcoholics in the last year. One of them just springs to mind, and he had been doing reasonably okay for a long time, but his situation deteriorated to such an extent he had to be admitted to a nursing home, you know. And I see my elderly patients then becoming deconditioned, you know, becoming more frail, less able to cope with independent living, and just the life being drained out of people, you know. And then there's the missed cancers, the missed opportunities to deal with cardiovascular issues in time. I could cite various examples, but I'm wary of indicating, you know, people may know who I'm talking about locally if they listen to me, because I'm come from not a very small village, but a very rural community here in West Limerick, and fairly tightly knit, and everybody knows everyone else, you know.
No, I get that. Absolutely. Yeah. Dr. Pat Morrissey is our guest. Pat, I've heard doctors in this country who've had, like yourself, they've had the courage to speak out. And they've said that we might be looking at, obviously not just in the UK, not just in Ireland, but globally, with regards to children's mental health, with regards to addiction issues, and especially cancers and stuff like that, we might be looking at something that it might be a health epidemic in the future, a tsunami, I've heard it described as, that might dwarf the effects of coronavirus. Do you go along with that?
I totally agree, Richie. I totally agree with that analysis. I did have a telephone conversation with another GP working in Galway there recently. He told me he had two 12-year-olds in that had slit their wrists. You know, he comes from, you know, Connemara, and he'd never seen that in patients, you know, he'd seen it much older, but for two 12-year-olds to be slitting their wrists, he'd never come across that before. And I talked to a lady from Galway as well, actually, coincidentally, earlier this week, who wanted to get in touch with me after she heard me talking, and she named off five people in their 20s who'd committed suicide by jumping in the river in Galway. She named the people, she knew them, she knew of them, you know. And she's quite convinced that there's a big rise in mental health issues, but it seems to be very hard to get the data on the mental health statistics here in Ireland. I don't know what it's like in the UK, but when we're trying to get information to bolster our side of the argument, it's very hard to get the data. Whereas they seem to have the other side seem to have ready access to whatever sort of figures they want to make their case.
That's an interesting, that's a very interesting point there. It is difficult to get any sort of numbers here in the UK. And that, well, you've obviously just said there, you're suspicious of that, because that's going to be a big giveaway if the government says, look, we have statistics on the impact on mental health. And if it's as bad as people think, well, it's going to put a big dent in their lockdown story, isn't it?
Yeah, there is evidence there. This is from Great Ormond Street Hospital earlier in the pandemic of something like a 500% increase, a massive increase in abuse injuries in children, physical abuse injuries presenting in Great Ormond Street Hospital. The paper is accessible on Collateral Global. There's a great resource there that documents a lot of the negative effects of lockdown through mental health issues and physical health issues, collateral global. I think that's linked with the Great Barrington Declaration and the group of academics and doctors who are behind that, including Sunitra Gupta and others.
That's really important. Can I just read you something very briefly? Back on February 1st, I think, Dr. John Wright, who works at Bradford Royal Infirmary, and John has been writing a diary for the BBC during the pandemic, Pat, and he wrote this in a post. He says, children are a lost tribe in the pandemic. While they remain, for the most part, perplexingly immune to the health consequences of COVID, their lives and daily routines have been turned upside down. Children in mental health crisis used to come to A&E about twice a week. Since last summer, it's been more like once or twice a day. And wait for it, because you told me that horrible story about the two 12-year-olds cutting their wrists. John Wright of Bradford Infirmary says, some as young as 10 have cut themselves, taken overdoses, or tried to asphyxiate themselves. There was even one child aged 8. That's from the Born in Bradford study. This guy's writing a diary for the BBC.
Yeah. And people have to realise, you know, the other side try and portray people who argue against the lockdowns as granny killers. I'm no granny killer. But it tries to disable the argument. You know, the hardship and the health consequences of the lockdowns are affecting people at much younger ages, as well as the aged who are, you know, dying of loneliness at the moment. But I know of a case of someone who committed suicide because her cancer operation for a brain tumor was cancelled early in the lockdown. Okay, so this woman, she lost 40 years of her life, right? So the average amount of life lost per COVID death is 6 months. So people need to, you know, the health planning requires people to really dig down into this data and see what's going on. It's not just the numbers. It's the lives, the individual lives lost, the length of lives lost, the productivity lost. We live life to enjoy life and get something out of it, and it's not just about existence. You know, and the other side seem to just want to focus completely on COVID deaths and totally disregard any other sort of hardship or other health issue to the detriment of the general health of the population. Health by the World Health Organization is defined as a state of spiritual, mental and physical well-being. You know, it isn't defined as the absence of any one disease. And they've totally, you know, Sage and Neffet have totally lost perspective on what health actually means.
Dr. Pat Morrissey is with us from Adair in County Limerick. You're with the Richie Allen Show, coming up for 18 minutes past six. Before we talk about the vaccines, how do you feel? I mean, I'm like yourself, I'm an Irishman, and I remember many a Friday night watching a panel debate on the Late Late Show when Gay Byrne was at the helm. God love him and God be good to him. And there you had Gay, and even the most seemingly extreme of positions were heard and were tolerated. It didn't matter. Now your position, and I'm a layman, to me is not an extreme position. Have you been shocked, and it's obviously a leading question, but I know the answer I'm going to get, shocked that our national media hasn't said, well, hang on a second, we've got the likes of Dr. Pat Morrissey, he's on, you know, the so-called front line with his patients every day. We've got Marcus de Bruin, we've got Dolores Cahill. Are you, I mean, I'm stunned myself that they haven't created space for people like you to debate these NFET people and these other people. I mean, this must be driving you mad, Pat.
Yeah, well, it is very frustrating, but it's easy to see that this is that the media outlets, the mainstream media outlets, are just propaganda channels at this stage, because they can't countenance a rigorous debate on the science or the issues. They want to control the narrative very, very tightly, keep people fearful and anxious, and hold out the prospect that these vaccines will be their salvation. And they don't want anything to interfere with that narrative.
And it's as blunt as that. And therefore, then, Carl Hennigan, you mentioned Sunetra Gupta earlier on. There's yourself, there's Marcus.
Yeah.
There's so many. You just can't come on. We're not going to tolerate your point of view, even though you've earned the right to your opinion.
Well, I'm not an academic. I'm not a professor. But, I've been working for 20 years as a GP, and I'm very interested in my patients. I take my job seriously, and I've been doing thousands of hours of reading and analysing, trying to understand and get my head around what's been going on in the world. And so I think I have an opinion. I have an informed opinion. I have experience. And I think that I deserve to be heard where there's debate. I don't believe that people need to necessarily believe that everything I say is correct. But why not have the discussion? Let the battle of ideas begin.
Absolutely right. Dr. Pat Morrissey, our guest, speaking live from Limerick. Huge interest in this, particularly back home. I say back home, of course, you are back home, Pat. I'm in a studio here in Salford. Now, obviously, the press has given you, a bit of a kicking. And this kills me. I'm a qualified journalist. I've worked in commercial radio and television. And it upsets me to see people's comments taken out of context. But it upsets me even more to see people having monstrous lies told about them. You are obviously not an anti-vaxxer or anything like it. What you said to me was fairly clear. Go ahead, Pat.
I know there are people who are against all sorts of vaccines. I'm vaccinating children Monday through to Friday here, and my own children were vaccinated and got the flu jab every year and never thought twice about it, you know. But these vaccines, they need to be put in the proper context. They don't actually meet the strict definition of what a vaccine is. They are gene therapies. We've never had these before. They've never been used on such a wide scale before. They are experimental because they're not fully licensed. They won't be fully licensed till early 2023. So that's beyond dispute. I mean, people might argue with what I'm saying, but it is actual fact. And people can check the EMA documents, the European Medical Agency documents relating to this. Patients can come and get vaccinated against COVID in my own practice. I will not be getting directly involved in it because... I strongly believe in first do no harm, but I don't agree in telling other people what to do with their lives. And this has been a big part of all this as well. There's this totalitarian tiptoe that's been going on, that increasingly people who don't want to partake are being told what to do with their lives and how to live their lives. It's now civil disobedience to live your life. But if, going back to the vaccine issue, people are welcome to come here and get the vaccine. But I have printed out material from the company documents and the European Medical Agency documents, so that I believe that they'll be better consented, that they'll be fully informed about the true status of these medicines, and that they'll be aware of the risk of death associated with them. Just to be precise about that, I'm referring, there are a couple of different ways one could die in relation to taking these vaccines. I'm not saying everybody's going to die when they take these vaccines, but there is a risk. But I had to go trawl down to page 115 of the Pfizer documents, 115 of a 140-page document to find reference to VAED, Richie, which is vaccine associated enhanced disease. Now, somebody might read that and say, that doesn't sound great, and then just move on to the next line. But what that means is an exaggeration of the disease process when you encounter it in real life after being vaccinated. And that entity results in death. So the company documents refer to this as a real risk. But it's buried in page 115 of the EMA documents. And I'm not saying that this is going to happen to anyone, but it's what's happened previously with coronavirus vaccines. Okay, and Mike Yeadon and Wolfgang Wodorg raised concerns about this in their letters to the EMA to try and stop the rollout of vaccines early on. So I'm not just making this up myself. I'm relying on some quite experienced and qualified people who've made their assessment and who are also quite worried about this risk. And I would guess that a lot of the general public are not aware of vaccine-associated enhanced disease or pathogenic priming, as it's otherwise known.
Can I ask for a clarification there? Because Professor Dolores Cahill of UCD was on with me last week, and she was on last year as well, and she explained this. I think she said exactly what you said there, that in some people, because of what you found on page 115, VAED, in some people who have been vaccinated, at some time in the future, they could have a very, very, very bad reaction to being exposed to a future naturally occurring coronavirus. That they would...
Exactly.
And that's horrendous. And they've acknowledged this in their own documentation.
Acknowledged in their own documents. And it, you know... Why take the risk when one has therapeutics that work? I've been using hydroxychloroquine and zinc, and I've less experience with ivermectin, but ivermectin has even better data, and it can be used over a longer time frame in the illness. So why take the risk with something so untested, so new, with such serious theoretical risks associated with it, when one has therapeutics to hand? And for a disease with a survival rate of, according to John Ioannidis from Stanford University, of 99.8%. So this is not Ebola. This is not the plague. This is a respiratory virus that is within the envelope of the annual flu.
Now, you say within the envelope, and I will call them your enemies. And people will be listening to this now, and they'll be saying, Richie's given Dr. Pat Morrissey a very easy ride. I'm not giving you an easy ride.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Go on.
No, I'm not. I'm not, because there isn't anything you've said that isn't very easily proven. So I can't jump down your throat and criticise you. I won't do that. But your critics will say, well, there's Dr. Morrissey now. He's kind of saying that coronavirus is not much worse than the flu. I mean, I was listening to an emergency room doctor called Alex George speaking on the BBC this morning, and he was talking about his own experiences of working in A&E, Pat, and he said, this is horrendous, this disease. He says, anybody who says that it's not much worse or it's in the same ballpark as flu, they're terribly wrong. It has a much more dreadful effect on the body. That's what they say.
Well, I appreciate it. I've had patients who've died from COVID, but the median age of death is 84 here in Ireland.
84, is it?
And they keep rolling out these hard cases for public consumption on the mainstream media of people who are much younger. But the nobody under the age of 25 has died from COVID in Ireland, and less than 100, or I could be open to correction, that something at the magnitude of about 100 under the age of 60 have died. So that's in a population of 4.9 million. So this is not again, this is not Ebola. And also, a lot of these people, if they had been given vitamin D, if they had been given early access to therapeutics, we wouldn't find ourselves in the situation that we find ourselves in now, you know, grasping for these novel experimental therapies to be our salvation.
Really good stuff, Pat.
So I'm not...
It's a good answer, that. And I wanted to stay with the hydroxychloroquine, because that's obviously been very controversial. And again, as a guy who's been making radio programs, producing them for over 20 years, I find it amazing that you had these doctors in America, qualified men and women like yourself, no reason whatsoever to tell lies. And they came out in Houston, Texas, I think it was, and they said, look, we're using hydroxychloroquine and we're having great success with it. And they were hammered, they were torn apart by the media for saying this, even though they've been treating their patients successfully with it. Now, I know that in Ireland, the HSE, correct me if I'm wrong, said last year that, you know, physicians like yourself shouldn't use it. You continue to use it anyway, Pat. What sort of flack have you taken for that?
Well, I was complaining to the medical council, and I'm still under proceedings with respect to the medical council. So that's not a comfortable place to be, but. No. At least I can sleep at night because my conscience is clear that, you know, I'm doing the right thing. And I'm just hoping, maybe I'm a bit naive, that that the truth will come out in the end, you know. And as you rightly say, Richie, I mean, I've nothing to gain out of this. And every, you know, the hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, they're relatively inexpensive medications. Whereas the vaccines, there's a lot more money to be made on those. You know, people, you know, when they're talking about crime, you know, they say, you know, follow the money. And maybe that isn't the exact analogy for this, but you know, I'm suspicious. But the issue around the vaccination, everybody I convinced, and I've convinced a few, I've informed them, and they've made their own decisions then, and they've listened to what I've said. That's money that I'm not earning, you know, and in fact my whole livelihood is at risk for what I'm saying, you know, and it's at risk because I'm just trying to tell the truth, and if I'm wrong, somebody come out and refute what I'm saying. You know, that's all I ask. Put me right if I'm wrong. You know, other people's motivations can be questioned on the basis of you know, what the incentives are. I've been upset, actually, by a lot of my colleagues. I've heard stories of people just being referred for COVID tests, you know, who are perfectly well, who have psychiatric issues, who want to see their doctor, and they're being referred for COVID tests because there's money to be made out of that, you know, and it's just a racket that many of my colleagues are engaging in, and it's shameful, and I won't have any part of that. You know, I think as doctors we're well paid, and we shouldn't be profiteering on this COVID panic, you know.
Dr. Pat Morrissey's with us. Pat, can you stay with me for another few minutes? If that's okay. Now, if you've got to run now, you run, because you have a family and you have things to do. But it's just that there's an enormous amount of comments coming in on Twitter and elsewhere, and people glad to hear you. Speaking to us today, Dr. Pat Morrissey in Adair in County Limerick. William is in Scotland, and he's raised the point about death certificates, this whole idea of dying with COVID 28 days after a positive test. Now again, look, there's no point in me trying to pretend to be objective, because I'm not really. When it comes to coronavirus, I'm not. I've nailed my own credentials, or my own, I should say, my own opinions to the mast. I find it incredibly bizarre that even last summer Oxford University said there is a huge problem here with regards to assigning somebody as a COVID death. Even Bell Mooney in the Daily Mail the other day, I'm sure you saw this, Pat. Bell Mooney, a renowned writer for the Daily Mail, said she was aghast that a senior relative was put on the COVID death list, even though he definitely did not die of coronavirus. Is that a big problem, that, Pat?
It is a problem, and the authorities here keep fudging the issue. I mean, the issue of whether people are dying with or of is of fundamental importance, and I don't have the figures to hand, but the total figures, my impression is that the people who died without any underlying conditions is a very small fraction, and only something like 1,000, I believe. I'm open to correction on that, but it's a very small fraction of the total number of COVID deaths. And we have exactly the same issues as you have in the UK. And another, worrying aspect of that is the apparent spike in death rates in nursing homes and sheltered facilities after vaccination that isn't talked about. In actual fact, the only two deaths that I've had with people who swabbed positive for COVID were both vaccinated. They were both became ill a week after they were vaccinated, and they died within another two and a half weeks after vaccination. Now that could be just coincidence. But it does behove the authorities to look at this issue. Because there were worrying trends in Gibraltar and in Norway and in other jurisdictions.
Basingstoke, Pat. 22 right. Seniors in a care home of about 60 died last month, not long after getting the vaccine. And I have enough integrity as a journalist that I could never make the claim that those people died of the vaccine, but you said it behoves the authorities. How could you not look into that?
Just look into it, and clarify the situation, clarify it. And, I want to clarify that there may be some, and hopefully there is some protection in relation to taking these vaccines. I hope there is for those who are taking them, especially the older age cohort. But it does behove the authorities to look into these issues and be honest. And then they will gain the trust of the population instead of just fear and anxiety. They will gain the trust of people with critical minds who are asking these questions.
Loads of comments. Jean Anne Crowley, the actress, friend of ours on the programme, knows Bell Mooney very well. 93-year-old dad was listed as having died of coronavirus when he didn't. Let me read a couple more tweets and 5 more minutes then, Pat, and I'll let you go. And I really thank you profusely, sincerely for coming on today. No more than 5 minutes. Claire says, finally, a doctor that has the cojones to call the vaccines what they really are. They are indeed gene therapies. Would people take chemo if they didn't have cancer? So why would people not at risk take a therapy for something that isn't a danger for them? Thanks so much for that. I could go up here. Kevin is in Argentina listening to this, believe it or not. He says, you should ask Dr. Morrissey, Richie, how many other doctors would read the first 15 pages, let alone get down to page 115. Fair enough, Kevin. Hi to Alan, who's listening to this with great interest. Diane says, Dr. Pat Morrissey is paying attention. I wish more people were like him. Just a couple of quick questions on that to finish today, Pat, and thanks for coming on. I'm guessing,
no problem, Richie.
I'm guessing there are plenty of GPs back home. I'm guessing there are plenty of GPs here that are totally on board with you, but they haven't just been able to make the leap just yet because they're concerned in terms of the personal consequences. That must be right. There must be a lot of doctors.
Well, as I say, I'm under a threat of proceedings with the medical council, and I still have to put food on the table and keep a roof over the head of my family. So that's a very uncomfortable situation to be in, and You know, that has a chilling, that action on behalf of the authorities has a chilling effect on my colleagues. Then when they see that, if somebody raises a question, however genuine it might be, if somebody raises an issue and they're considered to be that's considered to be some form of malpractice, and that their livelihood is being threatened, that has a chilling effect on debate access to the truth. So that definitely is holding back some of my colleagues. I know it's because I've spoken with some of them who would speak out only for fear. And I do appreciate, though, that I am in a minority. Most of my colleagues, I'm afraid, are going along with all this without asking a lot of questions. And I suppose it's because they just, trust uncritically, you know. That's what I'm afraid is going on.
And absolutely finally, the absolute bloody final question, as we used to say on the radio years ago in Spain, the absolutely bloody final one. If it gets to the stage where the screw is tightened, I mean, you've got a marvellous manner about you, I think. I've seen you on videos, I've heard you speaking elsewhere. But you've said, look, I will go to court, I'll have my day in court if it ever gets to the stage that we hope it doesn't get to. You will challenge it in court.
Well, I may be naive, Richie, but I believe that the truth will out in the end, as Richard Feynman, the famous scientist, once said. So I hope don't have to have my day in court, but I hope that the Fourth Estate will do their job. And thank you very much for having me on. The media have, by and large, in general, have not stepped up to the mark in relation to this issue. Although I have got some coverage, although some of what I've said has been twisted, and some of what I've said, a lot of what I've said has been left out that I think will be very valuable in this debate. But you know, I'll let that go for now. But I'm hopeful, and I trust in God, and I trust in the truth, and we'll all meet on the other side of this, let's hope.
You're welcome back here anytime, Pat. Anytime you want to chat. You're very welcome.
Thanks, Richie.
And your patients are lucky to have you. Look after yourself, Pat. Bye for now.
You too. Bye.
Bye, bye now. That was Dr. Pat Morrissey, live on the line from Adair in County Limerick. Sounds like a great guy, Pat. And has been, he's been under pressure back home, because Pat has decided not to administer coronavirus vaccines to his own patients. And he said, look, I think the vaccines are untested, unlicensed and experimental. And he explained candidly to us on this programme earlier why he believes that. And until there's stronger evidence that the jabs don't pose any risks to health, I'd rather not deliver them. But the clinic itself is still vaccinating people. Just Pat won't do it. And he won't give it to himself. He's not taking the vaccine himself. And he answered the question there about hydroxychloroquine, which he has been given to people along with zinc. Now, any number of doctors, particularly stateside, have said, and these are qualified men and women, GPs, or as they say in America, MDs, they've been using hydroxychloroquine because it is efficacious in treating these viruses, these respiratory infections. And they've been hammered for doing that in the United States as well. And Pat referenced, didn't he, that these drugs are cheap. They're cheap to produce. They're generic drugs and they don't cost very much. And maybe that's got something to do with why, you know, so-called health authorities are recommending that they not be used, even though there seems to be a lot of evidence that these drugs do, in fact, work very well when people have got, you know, very bad coronavirus or very bad flu. I'm going to take a tune from Morrissey from Moz. When we come back, I'll read more of your comments. It's Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show, the 23rd of February 2021, live from Salford, the BBG, not the BBC. Yes, the man who several years ago stopped a concert, he stopped his own performance at a festival because he could smell the burger vans a couple of hundred metres away at the back of the field. I can smell the burgers, said the vegan Morrissey. I'm not going on until they stop cooking the burgers. Right, let me read one or two of your tweets before I play a little bit of interesting audio for you. Let me do that. Hi to Liz Jones. How you doing, Liz? How are you? You well? Hi to Chris Clough. How you doing, Chris? Hi to Bill, who says the jabs are unnecessary. It is as simple as that. I'm certainly no epidemiologist. I'm certainly no virologist. But it's obvious to me, just using the government's own data, using its own statistics, that you'd have to be mad to have the vaccine. If coronavirus exists in the form they tell us it does, and I'm not saying it doesn't, I never have. If it does, most of us have probably had it, not even known it. Passed through us. It's only the very, very old and the very infirm and the immunosuppressed or the immunocompromised. Those are people who have to worry about respiratory infections. Hi to Carol Jones. How you doing, Carol? Carol says, Richie, of course there must be other GPs who feel the same as Dr. Pat and understand his position. Can the public write to the medical council in support of Dr. Pat, or will they be ignored? If he does end up in court, I pray people will turn up to support him. I have no doubt they will. No doubt they will. Let's scroll on down. Hi to Patricia. How you doing, Patricia? Who says, what kind of a world is it when a person who seeks the truth feels threatened for doing that? What kind of person seeks the truth? Simple answer, says Patricia. A hero. And again, it's a good point there, Patricia. He mentioned this himself. I brought it up. None of the doctors in the United States who said they endorsed hydroxychloroquine. There's nothing in it for any of these doctors. They didn't stand to gain financially from the sale of hydroxychloroquine. It seemed to me, and I looked at it very carefully, these were physicians who were acting on their conscience and acting on their oath. Yes, first, do no harm, as Dr. Pat said. But then it's about doing the absolute best for your patients, isn't it? It must be. What's the best thing I can do there now for Mr. Murphy or Mrs. O'Shea? Well, I'm pretty sure that if they take hydroxychloroquine and zinc, that's going to expedite their recovery. Therefore, I'm going to give them hydroxychloroquine and zinc. It couldn't be any simpler. Now, don't say to me, what are you doing? I'm not endorsing hydroxychloroquine and zinc. I'm not, because I don't know anything about it. What I do know is, because last winter, the winter of 2019-2020, I was gravely ill. And I know why I was gravely ill. Because I'd gotten a bit, I won't say lazy, because I've never been lazy in my entire life. But I hadn't been taking as much zinc, vitamin C and vitamin D3 as I would have previously done. I just wasn't doing it. And by God and sunny Jesus, when I got very sick last January and was convinced I was going to die, not because I'm a hypochondriac. You saw the video that I put out on Facebook. It alarmed a lot of people, including a lot of people back home. I couldn't breathe. I was in a desperate situation. And I was crying, not like crying like a big baby, but I was in bed thinking, you stupid, baldy bastard. Why did you stop taking the daily supplements? Or why did you stop taking them frequently? Well, I tell you, dear listener, once we got to October of this year, of last year, vitamin D3, zinc and vitamin C. Now, in the last few days, last week or so, I've gotten a bit slack again. And yesterday I gave myself a slap in the face. Literally, I smacked myself in the puss and I said, stop it now, get back to taking the supplements. And I have done. Now, of course, I couldn't say that if you begin every late autumn, early winter, by doing the zinc, vitamin D3 and vitamin C, no guarantee that you'll go the entire winter season without getting some sort of a bug. You might do, but every doctor over a certain age that I've ever met, they've all said to me, if you do the vitamin D3, the zinc and the vitamin C, and you do pick up a bit of a bug, it'll, ironically, this is ironic, because they tell you if you take the coronavirus vaccines, don't they? If you take the shit and you get COVID, it won't be so bad. That's the irony. The reality is, if you take the supplements and you do happen to, unfortunately, come down with a bit of a bug, it won't be nearly as bad. as it would have been if you didn't take the supplements. Now, I'm touching wood here, my wooden desk here. I'm touching wood because I have not been ill this winter. Not been ill. My last illness was last January when I was in a bad, bad way. I've not been properly ill since. Had a sore throat. I think I missed one radio show early autumn because I lost my voice for 24 hours. Failing that, I've not been off work. And I've not been sick. And I feel good taking those supplements. Maybe there's a placebo effect, I don't know, associated with some of that. But that's what I would advise. You know, not being a doctor, I would advise. And if somebody like Dr. Pat Morrissey is saying, listen, zinc, hydroxychloroquine, that's if you've gotten ill. But before you get ill, why not take the zinc, the D3 and the supplements? Listen to this very, very brief bit of audio. We heard a little bit of Julia Hartley Brewer's programme back at the beginning of the programme today. And she's got some interesting people on there pretty regularly. And Mark Harper is a Conservative MP. And he's part of this COVID recovery group. Now, it's a backbench group that is very lockdown sceptical. Right? Backbenchers that are putting pressure on Boris Johnson, Mark Harper. Julie Hartley Brewer interviewed him this morning. And she wondered, as she was speaking with him, if some of this draconian madness that was brought in to defeat COVID, if some of it is going to be around, well, forevermore. Listen to Hartley Brewer's question and Mark Harper's response.
Are you not concerned that this could happen again next winter? This could happen any time the government deems there is an emergency and can scare the living daylights of the public, and that we have lost our fundamental freedoms forever?
Well, I think you raise a couple of very important points there. One, I think, is the framework of the law underpinning these sorts of measures, I think, leaves a great deal to be desired. And my colleague, Steve Baker, has been pushing very hard for a new Public Health Act, a new way we deal with these sorts of issues, where there's much more parliamentary scrutiny, much more control, and much more challenge to ministers to justify the decisions they're taking. And I think that's a very sound argument. On the issue about consequences, I think it'll depend a bit on public opinion. One of the things I'm a little disappointed about, again, is the if we see the data, we keep being told it's data, not date. If we see the data more encouraging, you know, we see deaths and hospitalizations fall quickly as we roll out the vaccine, I would have hoped that you could have therefore unlocked more quickly. But it seems the government's determined to stick to this timetable, even if the data turns out to be better than hoped. And I hope they think again about that, because if the data is very positive, and we've even heard some government scientists suggest this, if the data moves in the right direction more quickly, then I would hope the measures could be eased more quickly as well to reflect the data.
Mm. We're going to wait and see. We're going to watch very carefully, aren't we? Now, listen up and listen good, dear listener. Listen up and listen good. Before we go, when chatting with Dr. Pat Morrissey today, pre the programme, before the programme, he sent me something that he'd received from a fellow doctor. And I said, I'll read that out, Pat, because it's very nicely put and very interesting. Dr. Billy Ralph is a GP in County Wexford, which I know very well, obviously, in the southeast. Dr. Billy Ralph, he's a GP too, and he's a friend of Dr. Pat Morrissey's. And Billy wrote this earlier today. And Pat said, he asked Billy if Billy would mind if he sent it to me. And he sent it to me. Okay, I've got it here now. Let me just make an adjustment here. Right, we're back in the room. So Dr. Billy Ralph wrote this. It's called Litany of the Lost. Litany of the Lost. By Dr. Billy Ralph. Bottle banks are full whilst churches are empty. Amazon is blossoming as hairdressers and pubs go bust. Face masks and latex gloves instead of high heels and summer dresses. Bums glued to seats and eyes fixed to screens whilst football boots hang motionless on hooks. Netflix devoured in silence as guitars and drums scream out to be heard. The old grow lonelier as the young forego their youth and grow lonelier too. Chemtrails go fewer and fainter as worry lines grow deeper and darker. Truth fades from memory as propaganda paints a new reality. Politicians speak words as nebulous as candy floss, and people consume them. Fear is nourished, hope is rationed, whilst questions are starved before birth. Illness and cancer disappear to make way for an ancient foe of dubious virility. Science regresses as Galileo's telescope goes unused again. Bernays smiles and catches his sneeze to protect the house of cards. The world is closed, but McDonald's is open. Dr. Billy Ralph, Wexford GP, sends that to Dr. Pat Morrissey, who sent it to me earlier today. That's it for today's Richie Allen Radio Show. Thank you so much for listening to it. We're back again tomorrow at 5 o'clock UK time on the usual channels for Wednesday's programme. Gerald Celente is amongst the guests. Thank you so much to Dr. Pat Morrissey. You can find Dr. Pat on Twitter, by the way. Do give him a follow on Twitter. We'll stay in touch with him, no doubt. In the meantime, you enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Take care of yourselves and one another. I've been the BBG. It's time up tonight. Catch you tomorrow, 5 o'clock as usual. Bye now.